Life-changing radio begins now.
Bob Bernie Live. Listen. Think. Discern. This is Bob Bernie Live.
Welcome to this hour of Bob Bernie Live. This is Bob Bernie, and I am in the Philippines on behalf of the Bible League. Filling in today for me is Chris Long, Executive Director of the Ohio Christian Alliance, and I mean this with all sincerity. Every Ohioan owes Chris a debt of gratitude as being a voice for truth in Ohio's political landscape. I am honored and pleased to introduce to you my guest host today, Chris Long.
Well, thank you, Bob. I'm very humbled by that. I was unaware that Bob had left us that message before me coming on the air, and I'm very honored by that introduction. Thank you, Mr. Bernie. And actually, I think very highly of Bob, and what a distinct privilege it is to sit behind this microphone, where, in my opinion, one of the great talk show hosts in Christian circles, Monday through Friday. Many of you who listen to Bob Bernie Live on a regular basis know what quality broadcast that you get here at WRFD 880 in Columbus. And we would all be missing something very great if Bob was not on the air, and I'm so thankful that he is. And it's been my privilege upon occasion to sit in for him. And our prayers are with him as he's in ministry in the Philippines. Well, this has been a great 2 hours, and we've talked to several topics. And we had with us State Representative John Adams in the first hour. And we talked about the president's speech. But with us on the phone is, as promised, is Bill Fetter, founder of the American Minute, author of several books. And most notably, What Every American Needs to Know About the Koran. In fact, Bill will be with us on October the 15th, that's a Thursday night, at the Four Point Sheraton in Akron for our Fall Freedom Banquet. And Bill is our featured speaker that night, and we hope that you'll join us. The proceeds of the banquet go to help the Ohio Christian Alliance, our educational efforts for the fall election, to help get the word out to oppose Issue 3, which is the expansion of gambling that is again on the ballot this November. 4 times in the past 2 decades, Ohioans have voted down any expansion of gambling. Hopefully, we'll be victorious again. I believe that our economic recovery lies elsewhere rather than basically taking from the poor of the state, the people that can least afford it, who will desperately try to get money through gambling, and it just doesn't work out that way. And I've counseled many families throughout the years who have had the addiction of gambling. In fact, even Governor Strickland, who has reversed himself on this, previously had said that gambling is an insidious addiction that ruins lives and families. And he was correct when he said that, and I was very saddened that the governor had reversed himself and now believes that Ohio's budget woes will be fixed by slots at racetracks. But with us this afternoon is Bill Fetter from the American Minute. And, Bill, welcome to Bob Bernie Live.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Chris, and great to be on Bob Bernie Live.
Well, Bill, you're just a great friend, and we've always enjoyed you through the years being a speaker at our banquet. We're looking forward to you being at our fall banquet once again, and just look forward to what you'll be talking about. But Columbus, Ohio has been in the national news, and that's because of a young Muslim girl who ran away from home, went to Florida, stayed with a Christian family. She's 17 years of age. She has converted to Christianity upon the confession of her faith, and then expressed real concern that her Muslim family, she was in threat physically because of her conversion to Islam. But I've had the pleasure of sitting in a lecture that you basically gave us the history of Islam, and you do that basically in your book, What Every American Needs to Know About the Koran. Let's talk about that this afternoon.
Sure, I would love to. I've written the book. As you mentioned, it's titled What Every American Needs to Know About the Koran. The subtitle is A History of Islam in the United States. And it brings out the 1,400-year history of Islamic expansion, how they conquered Arabia and North Africa and Egypt and Spain and southern France and the Holy Land and the Byzantine Empire and surrounded Vienna, Austria twice. You brought up a situation with Rivka Berry, the 17-year-old girl who escaped from her family, is now in Florida, and she has converted away from Islam, and she's concerned, rightfully so, that her family wants to kill her. Muhammad said, and it's written in the Hadith, Hadith al-Bukhari, Volume 9, says, Muhammad said, whoever changes his Islamic religion, kill him. And in Islam, there's three sets of literature. One is called the Quran, which are revelations to Muhammad. The second is called the Hadith, and those are stories and traditions remembered about Muhammad. And the third is the Sirat, which is a biography of Muhammad and other writings through the centuries. But in the Hadith, it says, Muhammad said, whoever changes his Islamic religion, kill him. And so we have the example of Muslims doing this for 1,400 years. Matter of fact, there's a Sheikh Abd Allah ibn Jibreen. He said this, if your wife leaves Islam and she does not repent, then the ruling of Allah should be carried out on her, which is execution. Because the Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, said, whoever changes his religion and leaves Islam, execute him. And so this is something that is called an honor killing. We've recently heard a case where the founder of Bridges TV, a Muslim television network, had beheaded his wife because she wanted to divorce him. St. Louis, Missouri, several years ago there was an incident. Bill Clinton had moved 30,000 Bosnian Muslims to St. Louis, and they took over the old German neighborhoods. And there was an instance where one of these young Muslim girls was going to the public school, and she'd become friends with a young black boy, and the parents wanted to break it off, and she wouldn't, and so the mother held the daughter down in the bed while the father murdered her. And then last year there was another case. This is from KMOV, the television network, Channel 4. This is the transcript. It says, police said late Saturday afternoon a 51-year-old man living with his family in a second-floor apartment threw his wife and their 13-year-old daughter out of the window. And these were Muslims, and they were from Afghanistan, and they spoke little or no English. And they try to consider it under the same auspices that we would consider spanking. In other words, hey, I'm disciplining my kid. I'm spanking them. I don't want the health care workers and the police to come in and interfere with my right as a parent to spank my kids. Well, these Muslim families that like to practice their faith this way, they try to say that this is them just practicing their faith, and this is just an internal family thing, and it's called an honor killing. You can go on Google and type it in, and there's hundreds and thousands of cases of it all around the world. And it's considered an insult to the family to have the child convert away from the faith. You know, if a Christian has a child that converts away, it's an embarrassment, and you're sort of sad about it. I remember growing up hearing stories of, you know, Jewish families, and they would be upset if a child converted away from the faith, and sometimes they would even, you know, have a funeral or say, that child is dead to us, and take their pictures off the wall and so forth. Well, in Islam, it's that plus more. They would make sure that the child is dead to them by going ahead and killing them. And Rivka had stated, she said that... in Islam, that it's great honor to have to kill her. She says, they have to kill me because I'm a Christian. It is an honor issue. And she said no one in her family had converted away from Islam for over 150 years. And she said, think of the great honor it would be to kill me. And so we don't understand that in the West because we have this basic Judeo-Christian. Even people that aren't Christians, they are living in a society that has been so bathed with this idea, you know, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. There's none of those verses in Islam. In Islam, Muhammad loves the Muslim who has submitted, and Allah hates the infidel or the kafir.
Well, you know, my first experience with this, Bill, is a number of years ago. Chris Acuna, who is a pastor from Kenya, was born in a Muslim family. And, of course, Kenya is made up of Muslims, Christians, and Hindus. And he was raised in a Muslim home, but converted to Christianity. He accepted the Lord Jesus as his personal Lord and Savior. He said to me, and very passionately, he said, I had to flee my village and my family for my life. They had put a death sentence on my head and sought me out to kill me because of my conversion to Christianity. Well, we're going to talk more about that. We're talking with Bill Fetter, who is the author of What Every American Needs to Know About the Koran. And he's the founder of the American Minute. We're going to talk about how you can log on to that, receive his daily updates. And you're listening to Bob Burney Live. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is Bob Burney Live.
The Word, 880 WRFD, is life-changing radio.
We're back with Bill Fetter from the American Minute. Bill is also the author of What Every American Needs to Know About the Koran. And we're talking with Bill this hour. And if you have any questions, you can call us at 877-BOB-LIVE. Bill, as we continue our discussion, just before the break, I was telling you about a story of a pastor friend that I knew in Kenya who related to me his conversion from Islam to Christianity and how he had to flee his village and he had to flee his family for fear of his life. And that was so foreign to me, in someone's testimony. And he talked about how there was a death squad that was sent out to kill him because of his conversion and how he resided in the trees and in the wilderness and survived. Here is a man who he was thrown out in Kenya. He had nothing. He literally was without home, shelter, food, or resources. And this was the price he paid to converting to Christianity. Well, the Lord really blessed Chris. The last time I talked to him, he had 35 churches in the bush in Kenya and pastors that he was training and had quite a work that was going on there for the Lord. But we saw in the last couple of years the violence in Kenya between the different political parties. But it wasn't just that. It was Islam had its hand in that, did it not?
It did. And President Obama went over and campaigned for Odinga. Odinga was the candidate who was a fellow member of the Luo tribe. And he signed an agreement with the Muslims to allow Sharia law in Islam. And President Obama went over there and campaigned for him. Well, Odinga lost barely in December of 2007, and so the Muslims rioted and killed thousands, surrounded churches, some Assembly of God church north of Kenya was set on fire, and the Muslims stood outside with machetes and killed anybody that tried to get out.
Reminiscent of the scene in the movie The Patriot that we saw with actor's name, but
Mel Gibson,
yes, and reminiscent of that scene, and that actually happened in 2007 to an Assembly of God church. That's just unthinkable,
right? And so this person kept Odinga at it. Now Odinga's dad had been a leader, and Obama's dad had helped Odinga's dad, and so this was sort of an interesting thing where Obama went over to help the son, Odinga. But you have to understand RPM. RPM stands for religious, political, and military. So Islam is not just a religion. It is a political system and a military system. Why? Because Muhammad was not just a religious leader. He was a political leader and a military leader. Briefly, Muhammad, for 12 years, was just a religious leader in Mecca, and he only made about 100 converts in 12 years. Mecca was a pagan city. In the year 622 AD, the pagans had enough, tried to kill Muhammad. He fled to a Jewish city called Medina. Medina had three Jewish tribes that controlled it, plus there were some pagans that were sort of unorganized, and they had no voice in the Medina government. Well, Muhammad Muhammad's excited. He goes amongst the Jews and tells them about his faith, but they quickly reject him. And they say, you're not a prophet in the line of our prophets. And he gets a little upset and changes the direction of bowing. Originally, Muslims were bowing toward Jerusalem. Well, Muhammad goes to the pagan neighborhoods and begins to get converts and more or less becomes a community organizer. And he organizes these pagans, a couple thousand of them, and then he goes back to the Jews, and now he's got some political clout, and they make a treaty with him. And he becomes a full-fledged political leader in Medina. And then something happens. Muhammad had some converts back in Mecca chased out, just like he was chased out, and their houses and properties were confiscated. And here they're chased out. They show up in Medina, where Muhammad's a political leader, and they're destitute. They don't have any money. They don't have any food. And so Muhammad permits them to rob the caravans headed to Mecca in retaliation for the Meccans taking their houses. So this is different than Christianity, where Jesus said, if they take your coat, give them your shirt. You know, walk the extra mile, pray for those who despitefully use you, turn the other cheek. Muhammad said, if they take your house, you take their caravan. So he had 300 warriors. They'd hide along the caravan routes. They'd jump up and rob him. He had a whole chapter of the Quran revealed to him on how to distribute the booty from robbing caravans. And so when we see, you know, Somali pirates are robbing ships and so forth, that's part of the heritage. And so in the year 624 A.D., the Meccans send 1,000 soldiers to protect their caravan. Muhammad, with just 300 Muslim warriors, defeats 1,000. It's called the Battle of Badr, B-A-D-R, Battle of Badr, 624 A.D. And it's such a great victory for Muhammad, he takes this as a confirmation from Allah that he is supposed to be a military leader. And so in the next 8 years before he dies, Muhammad fights in 66 battles and raids. He leads 27 of them. He even uses the catapult when he attacks cities, like the southern city of Al-Ta'if. And when he was told that women and children were in the city and they were getting killed by these catapults, Muhammad's response was, they are among them. So they got to be killed too. So suicide bombers today say it's okay to kill innocent women and children to advance Islam because Muhammad killed innocent women and children when he used the catapults. And so we see the effort to split the militant and political side away from the religious side of Islam is you're trying to split Muhammad because he was all three. And then in the year 627 AD, the Meccans send 10,000 soldiers to Medina to stop Muhammad once and for all from robbing their caravans. Well, Muhammad was a brilliant military leader. His version of roadside bombs was he dug potholes and trenches all around the city of Medina. And this rendered the superior cavalry of the Meccans useless. You can't charge your horse and camel across a field full of potholes. They'll break their legs. And so the battle drags on for a long time. The Meccans finally decide to bring their troops home. Muhammad considered this a great victory, that his enemies have showed cowardice and have left. And so he ends up going back into the city of Medina. Those three Jewish tribes, one got offended at him. He picked the one the other two didn't like. And so the other two didn't come to his defense. And he got offended with them, confiscated their property, and chased them out. And then the second tribe that the other one didn't like, he gets offended at them, confiscates their property, chases them out. Finally, there's just this third Jewish tribe, and after the Battle of the Trench, where he dug all those trenches, he goes back into the city, and he's taking a bath. This is what the Hadith says, and the Surat, and he's taking a bath, and the angel Gabriel appears to him. Now, it's not the same angel Gabriel from the Bible, because the angel Gabriel in the Bible always wants to defend the Jews. And so this angel
We're going to hold it right there. We're going to come back with Bill Fetter from the American Minute. That's theamericanminute.com to receive his daily updates and briefings of American history. And you'll receive that in your email. We'll be right back with Bill Fetter. Don't go away.
Bob Burney Live. Looking at today's news through a biblical worldview.
This is Life Changing Radio, The Word, 880 WRFD.
We're back with Bill Fetter from the American Minute. That's theamericanminute.com, and you can receive Bill's daily updates and briefings of history and that day in history that comes into your email. And it's some great stuff if you haven't been receiving that. It's great for homeschoolers as well. And also visit Bill's website, where a number of his books are featured there. And America's God and Country is an encyclopedia of quotations, a great work, a great resource book as well for speakers and pastors. And I actually covered the copy that I have, and we make sure that we get that into as many legislators' hands as we can and office holders. Backfired, how a nation born for religious tolerance no longer tolerates Christianity. And a number of books that Bill has written. Bill, what are some of the other books that you have listed there at the website?
The Ten Commandments and Their Influence on American Law. I did that for Matt Staver, who took the course all the way to the Supreme Court on the Texas and Kentucky Ten Commandments case. I read through all the colonial documents and put down where they actually cited the Bible, you know, on the Kentucky and Connecticut and Massachusetts blue laws and so forth. Anyway, another book is on George Washington Carver, the African-American scientist that developed 300 uses for the peanut. He was a Christian. He had Bible studies at Tuskegee, and I read through his personal correspondence and put on his letters where he mentions his Christian faith and gives Bible quotes and so forth. Another book is called Three Secular Reasons Why America Should Be Under God. So it's not devotional or religious. Those are important, but this book is three secular. So it goes, secular reasons why America should be under God? Yeah, one is, do you like having rights the government cannot take away? Well, yeah, everybody likes those rights. Well, then those rights need to come to you from a power higher than the government. That's why the founder said all men are endowed by their creator with certain able rights. And the idea is that the king was infringing on our creator giving given rights, so we had a right to rebel against the king. John F. Kennedy, in his inaugural address, said the rights of man come not from the generosity of the state, but from the hand of God. Well, guess what? If there is no God, then the rights come from the generosity of the state, which is getting bigger all the time. And what the state giveth, the state can taketh awayeth. And that's what you have in totalitarian countries. They can tell you when you live and when you die. And so that's three secular reasons.
And one of your recent books, Endangered Speeches, how the ACLU and LBJ silenced free speech in the church. Really enjoyed that book as well.
Yeah, prior to 1913, there was no IRS. So churches did not have to worry about losing an IRS tax-exempt status, so churches spoke about everything. They spoke about abolition of slavery, women, blue laws, no business done on a Sunday, and to stop the child labor, women's suffrage, allowing women to vote. So churches were involved in all these social issues. 1913, the IRS was started, and they had a category for not-for-profits, which were not supposed to be taxed. And guess what? Everybody wanted to jump into that category so they wouldn't get taxed. So first you had the Rockefellers and Carnegies start their Rockefeller Foundation and Carnegie Foundation, so they jumped into that category. And then different political groups, including a lot of communist groups. And 1917, there was a Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, and the communists took over, and they eventually took over 45 countries. And the way the communists did it is they would send community organizers and labor organizers into countries to take advantage of the tension, whether it was the blacks against the whites, the rich against the poor, the Christians against the Muslims, the Catholics against the Protestants, the proletariat versus the bourgeois, the working class versus the working owners. It really didn't matter, but they would organize the have-nots to overthrow the haves, promising to spread the wealth around, but once blood started falling, they simply would set up a dictatorship. Stalin, Pol Pot, Ho Chi Minh, Castro, Mao Zedong, and they would be a totalitarian government where the guy at the top would decide how everybody else lived, would actually own everybody else. And so these people began to come into America, these communist community organizers, and they formed, you guessed it, 501c3s. Matter of fact, the ACLU was started as a 501c3, and it was to defend those who were accused of being communists. And Planned Parenthood was started as a 501c3, and and all these other different groups. And so the government began to limit what 501c3s could and couldn't do, and years of that unintentional collateral damage, that the churches began to have their freedoms limited, which is unconstitutional because the First Amendment says Congress. And who created the IRS? Congress. Well, the First Amendment says Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion, nor prohibiting the free exercise thereof. So you consider what churches could do freely before Congress created the IRS to what churches could do after Congress created the IRS. And indeed, churches have lost their freedom. It's been prohibited. And the government tells them what they can and cannot talk about now. And so anyway, whether churches and pastors speak out about politics has nothing to do with separation of church and state, because for the majority of American history, they spoke about stuff. It's simply a tax code issue. Unfortunately, the tax code today limits what they can say, but it's, again, a tax code issue. Obama's changing the tax code as we speak. And so anytime the political will is there, you can change the tax code and tell pastors they can get back their freedoms to speak about whatever they want to speak about.
Well, and that's a great book. I really enjoyed that, and it's being a help to many people. And it is really a shame because the church, as you said, throughout its history here in our country, has led the way of the abolition of slavery, the suffrage movement, child labor laws. The church was on the front end of these issues, and this was a way that they would articulate it and be mobilized. And it's a shame that now many of the churches have been silenced, and pastors and church boards cower before the almighty IRS and choose not to participate or speak out. But, Bill, again, all these materials are available on your website, AmericanMinute.com. Again, with me on the phone is Bill Fetter from the American Minute. And Bill will be our featured speaker at the Ohio Christian Alliance Fall Freedom Banquet coming up October the 15th. That's Thursday at 6 p.m. for our meet and greet, 7 p.m. for dinner. The cost is $40. And you can log on to our website at ohioca.org and find out more information, or call us at 330-887-1922. We'll be right back with Bill Fetter just after these messages.
Call 1-877-BOB-LIVE.
The Word, 880 WRFD, is life-changing radio.
We're back with Bill Fetter from the American Minute and author of What Every American Needs to Know About the Koran. And, Bill, we have a caller from Westerville who has a question for you. Let's go to Jim from Westerville. Jim, welcome to Bob Burney Live.
Thank you very much. Actually, I've got a comment. Bill, I want to thank you for your American Minute because you make me look smarter than I really am, a lot smarter.
Oh, God bless you.
I get it every day. Now, I don't save everything, but I do save portions from time to time, and I'll put them on a floppy disk. And when I get an email conversations with folks, I got which I did a couple weeks ago, and the subject of public schools and Christianity came up. And boy, did you fill my coffers. I mean, I was throwing, it looked like I knew what I was talking about.
Well, you do know what you're talking about. And I, when I was putting together all these quotes, I actually, in addition to my book, I have a CD-ROM called American Quotations, and it's got over a million words in it.
Whoa.
Of quotes from colonial charters and state constitutions and Magna Carta, all that talks about, you know, God and our heritage. But anyway, I was putting it together, and I thought, you know, every quote is ammunition to somebody that's on the front lines fighting for faith. And so I'm just passing it along to you, and I appreciate your using it.
Well, I appreciate that, and if folks haven't subscribed to it, I don't know how many you have on your mailing list, but it can't be enough just based on how you can use that information. God bless you, brother.
Well, thank you for plugging it, and you know, AmericanMinute.com is the website, and it's free. It only takes a minute to read. That's the brilliance of it. But
It's beautiful. Thanks again, brother. Appreciate
it. Well, hey, thank you. And matter of fact, email me, and I'll send you a free ebook of one of my books. I put my book, What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, I put that as into an ebook, and so I can email it. And matter of fact, anybody else that calls into the show, Chris, if they call in, I'll send them a free ebook.
I already have that book and have read it.
Oh, great. Well, email me. I'll send you another one.
Have used
ebook.
It. It's very helpful. You're just incredible, Bill. I mean, you put it out in portions that we can just. I mean, you can nibble on it. You can take big bites, but you can always, you know, it's nutritious, every bit of it.
Well, thank you, Jim, for calling.
Sure.
God bless
you. I appreciate the call. You know, I had the opportunity a few months ago to speak at a military base, and they had 200 officers there and several generals, and I was in the same room where they do the top secret briefing, and I was giving my talk on Islam. I had my PowerPoint presentation. I go, here's Mecca, here's Medina, you know, there's my laser pointer. I said, Muhammad fought the Battle of Badra in 624. And they were like glued to every word because they were going to go over there and fight these guys. And afterwards, I got a letter from one of the generals saying, thank you for your lecture on Islam. You've made a tremendous impact on our command. And
Indeed. And in fact, Bill, when you spoke in Akron earlier this year, my son, who just came back from 5 years in the 82nd Airborne and 2 full years of service in Iraq and 3 different deployments, a lot of lights went on in his head as you lectured for nearly 2 hours. And, boy, that sounds like a long time, but not with Bill Fetter. I mean, even the kids were quiet and hanging on the edge of their seat as you gave us pretty much in almost two hours the complete history of Islam, which we really don't get through our history of school and public schools, and I'm not even sure or recall that the Barbary Pirates and the raid that Jefferson with the Marines raided there and the problems that we've had with Islam early on in our history as a country, you've kind of filled in the gaps. But for Jonathan, a lot of lights went on because when he was over there among the Iraqi people and part of the surge and part of the deployments, he said a lot of things came to light, what you shared that night. So it was very beneficial for him as well.
Well, I remember your son saying, well, that's what that word meant. And the word was abid, A-B-D. And it means slave, and it also means African.
Yes.
So in Arabic, they have only one word for African and slave. It's abid. It means level with the earth. And within the 1,400 years of Islam, they enslaved 180 million Africans. You know, castrate the men, make them eunuchs in their harem. If the, you know, the Ethiopian people, they thought the women were beautiful, and so they'd use them for sex slaves. And they did sell 10% of them to those terrible European slave traders that brought them to the United States. But it highlights the fact that every slave brought to America was purchased at a Muslim slave market. And the Muslims would go into the bush and buy the slaves or capture the slaves. And matter of fact, the word infidel is kafir. And so many of the South Africans were captured by the Muslims that that's their N-word. In other words, if you go to South Africa, don't call a black person kafir because the Muslims had called them that for so many years and persecuted them. But it's a fascinating history that, anyway, so your son said, you know, we had some African Americans in our platoon and we were walking through a Muslim neighborhood and the people were yelling out, abid, abid. And they said, well, to the interpreter, well, what does that word mean? And the interpreter said, oh, that's difficult to interpret. And he didn't know what it meant until I said, well, you know, in my talk, I said, that means slaves.
Yeah,
and call them slaves.
Exactly. And which is.
So it's a mystery that any black person would convert to Islam because it was just something that enslaved their ancestors. Muhammad was an Arab.
Well, that's right. And, you know, Jonathan, that was so revealing to him and offensive when he thought about it. You know, his comrades in arms who were African-Americans from our country being, you know, referred to in a slur like that. And the interpreter didn't want to divulge what the real meaning was. And until he had gone to your lecture, did he find out indeed what the meaning was. But Bill, again, you know, thank you for being on the program today and enlightening us again about the history of Islam. If you want to learn more, you go to AmericanMinute.com and look at the different resources that Bill has. And I think you'll be delighted with any of the books that you read from Mr. Bill Fetter. Bill, thanks for being my guest today.
Chris, thank you, and thank Jim for the call. And again, just a phone call away.
Well, we're looking forward to you being with us on October the 15th. Again, Bill Fetter will be with us for our Freedom Banquet. More information.
The Word, 880 WRFD, is Life-Changing Radio.